And we shall start today's introduction by talking about love, because devotion, bhakti means devotion or love for God. Now, in the world also, love has a lot of importance. I mean, you know, love is the one that binds relationships and brings joy into our life. If, like, there is a person who doesn't love anybody, or say who grew up without love, he didn't have a father's love or didn't have mother's love, maybe grew up in a foster home or somewhere. You know, some people get shunted from, you know, home to home, and they grow up very bitter, very angry, very negative towards the world, because they have not experienced that true unselfish love that parents, you know, can give a child. Or there are some other people who, even though they may have experienced this love, but they are incapable of giving love. They are very suspicious. They say, let me see how this person is. They suspect. And if this person turns out to be good, then I may love him. You know, they always have this suspicion. And so such people who are incapable of loving, or who have not received love, they become very bitter, they become very miserable, their life is unhappy. But a person who is genuinely capable of loving, and she loves everybody, irrespective of what it is and who that person is, there is universal love for all, then there is no depression, no disillusionment. Suppose somebody even cheats her, or, you know, she says, they say, aren't you angry? No, my love is unconditionally. It doesn't depend on who cheats me or who hurts me or who reciprocates my love. For most of us, love is a business. I love you because why? Because you love me, or I can get something from you. But a person who spontaneously loves all, for her there is no depression, there is no disillusionment, there is no sorrow. The depression is such a buzzword. Everybody goes around saying, I am depressed. You know, every other person you meet. But one who can share her love with all, nothing can make that person sorrowful. Nothing can make that person depressed. So in the world, when love can be such a powerful instrument to elevate us, to make us feel good, how much better must be love for God, the God who is all-powerful, almighty, all-giving, all-compassionate, all-kind, all-loving? How much more must be the standard of that love? Because in that love, there is no business. There is no give and take. The Lord is the one that constantly gives, and we are the one that are constantly receiving. So there is no business. Talking about receiving, there were these three men in a boat. They had all been hurt, and, you know, but they were good friends. And so they were just on the lake. They had gone a little distance, but they were good people. And suddenly an angel appeared on the boat and says, God is very pleased with you, and all three of you are going to be healed. So one man had a bent back, had severe back pain, and the angel touched him on the back, and instantly he became straight and his pain was gone. Second man, his eyes were so bad, he had so much neuropathy that even with thick glasses he could barely see, you know, barely see. So angel takes his glasses, throws them in the water. And the moment they touch the water, miracle, his eyes become perfect. He can see clearly. And the third man is limping and, you know, has a walking stick. So the angel approaches him. He says, don't come near me. Don't touch me. I am on disability. I don't want to lose my check. So that this God that is all kind and all compassionate and all loving, how should be our love for him or her? You know, many people worship Mother Goddess. We have Mother Goddess here. And so how should we love this entity, this all-powerful, all-pervading, you know, infinite entity? So I have talked about this before, but there are some new people. So it's very important that we not have a relationship of fear with God, because sometimes we are taught to fear him. You know, they say you should be God-fearing. If you don't listen to him, he will punish you and he will throw you in hell and you will suffer. Or some people say he's a very angry God, or he's a very jealous God. In my opinion, he's just loving God. There is nothing else. There is no other emotion that can describe God except love. And the more you try to develop that love for God, more you experience it. You feel that divine presence. You feel his loving hand that is carrying you and that is taking care of you and support. His hand is all the time there. We just have to feel it. You know, we are so busy, you know, running about in the world and developing this ego. I did it. I did it. I am so great. I am so wonderful that we forget that there is an almighty power that has given me whatever I have, that has created me, that has made this opportunity for me to work in the world. This beautiful world has been created. So we say develop a relationship with God. And that has to be a relationship of love, not of fear. And there are five kinds of relationships that are described. One is, of course, the Almighty Father in heaven, you know, which all even Christianity talks about and Islam talks about. And he's the father or the mother who has created the whole universe and created me. And there, that's a relationship of love, because with your parents, your relationship is of love, not of fear. Then the second is one, he's the master and I'm his humble servant. I'm his humble slave. Again, there, it's not a relationship of fear, but feeling of fulfillment that I am so blessed that he has chosen me to do his work. So when I'm doing the Lord's work, I do it with humility and with a sense of gratitude that I have been chosen. They say, not the chosen ones. It's not the chosen ones are not the one that God chose, but the one that chose him. See, if you choose him as your number one goal, then you can call yourself the chosen one. Not because he's not partial that, okay, I'm going to choose this one and not this one. It is one who turns towards him. Again, it's not that he's a politician, he wants to be praised, but I have given the example before, say there is a fireplace in one corner and you are sitting far away and saying, I'm cold, I'm suffering. You say, do nothing, just move close to the fireplace and you can enjoy the heat. So one who moves closer to the Lord enjoys the Lord's grace, enjoys the Lord's blessings, because his grace is available for all of us. So you can have a relationship of a father or mother. You can have a relationship of a master. Then some people have a relationship of a friend. God is my friend and he takes care of me. Like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, those of you who come on Sunday have heard the Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna the student was also the God's friend. And by the way, there will be a class on Sunday, Bhagavad Gita class, this Sunday at 11. We won't be closed, so if people are as interested in knowing. So there's a relationship of a friend, then a relationship of a beloved. Some people love God as my beloved, especially like the nuns. You know, they say, I'm married to Jesus. You know, so their relationship is of a beloved, of a married person. And it can be, even in India, we have example of Mirabai and several other saints who loved God as their beloved. And then, of course, another one that you can develop is a relationship of a student. You know, that I am the student and the Lord is my teacher, whatever knowledge I have. We have a book called Dakshinamurti Stotram, where the Lord appears as a teacher to bless the devotees and give them the knowledge. And then another one is a child. Many people love God as a little child. You know, they'll have a little picture of baby Jesus and they love him as a baby. In India, they will get Krishna in a small statue or a small brass statue, and then they will, you know, bathe him and they will change his clothes every day and feed him. And so they'll do everything that they do to their baby with love. So the point is that one should develop a relationship of love with God. And that is very, very important. Now, what is the nature of this devotion? Swamiji, in his tape, Swami Tejomayananda, I was listening and talks about how devotion is the fulfillment of all spiritual practices. All practices end in love for God. He says, like, you know, all the spiritual practices you do, they say you should control your mind, you should control your senses, you should develop dispassion, you should develop discrimination, right knowledge, So all these spiritual practices that we are taught, controlling and all this effort, then what does that do? He says those are like the fruits. I'm sorry, they're like the flowers in the tree. So in the tree there are flowers. So in our life, those qualities, control of the mind, control of the senses, dispassion, discrimination, right judgment, is like the flowers. Now what happens to the flower? It culminates into a fruit. You know, when the fruit grows, the flower ends and becomes the fruit. So what is the fruit in our life? Once I have developed these qualities of control of mind and senses, then the fruit is the right knowledge. The right knowledge that comes is the fruit, and as a result of that, I start living that knowledge. I do service of the Lord, I pray, and then I can read, I can understand, I study from the teacher. So from practices, I develop knowledge. So that is the fruit. But now, suppose there is a fruit and there is no juice in it. There is no juice in it. Now, would you want to try such a fruit? They say, this fruit is dry, you know, bite into it. There's no juice, there's no sweet, there's no taste. I don't want this, toss this fruit. So in the fruit of knowledge, what is the juice? The juice is bhakti. The juice is devotion. Juice is love for God. Unless you have love for God, that knowledge is dry. It is useless. It is of no benefit to anybody. You know, because people think that I'm an intellectual and I should have love for God. You know, I'm sorry, not love. I'm an intellectual and I have knowledge. And I'm going to study who am I, and then I'm going to study the Upanishads, and I'm going to study all the, you know, the different teachers like Raman Maharishi and Shankaracharya and all these great scholars, and I can chant Sanskrit, and I can, who am I? I can do all the analysis of who am I and what is this world. And you say, well, how about love for God? That is for ignorant people. You know, people who don't have the ability to think. It's good. For them, it is good. You know, these simple-minded people, it's good for them. Let them love God, and, you know, and let them go and sing his songs. And some people think, you know, that is what devotion is. I should sing songs for God, and I should cry for him, and I should dance and get crazy in ecstasy. And we find that, you know, like in the Hare Krishna movement, and also in some of the evangelical, you know, they will sing and they will go into such, you know, depth of ecstasy that they lose themselves, and they become. And so the intellectual will say, yeah, for those people, you know, those who are simple-minded, it's good for them. Let them do it. And let them do some rituals and do some prayers and offer flowers or light a candle. It's okay, but I am an intellectual. You know, we are intellectuals and we need to know who am I. Without knowledge, nobody can evolve spiritually. And so we get this little ego that I know more than the others. I also have the same problem, by the way. So I'm talking from personal experience. So we develop this ego that knowledge is superior to everything else. And even in the Gita, it says, Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. There is no greater purifier than knowledge. And I also used to quote that all the time. So is love even necessary for such a person, you know, who says, I know who God is, I know who am I, all I have to do is sit and meditate and chant Om, then I'll go into that samadhi state. He said, no, it is very, very necessary, it's very, very important. You cannot progress in spirituality without love, without surrender, without giving up this ego, because this subtle ego that I am somebody special is greatest tragedy that can befall. Of course, there is a worldly ego. You know, I am more rich than anybody else. I am more intelligent. I am more powerful. I can run better. I can, you know, I'm a greater mathematics teacher. Yes, but subtler than that is this subtle ego that I am spiritually better than thou, you know, better than thee, and that I am more holier than thou. And that ego, unfortunately, so developing love is very important. It's like the two birds of a bird of a wing. Like a bird has two wings, And if a bird only had one wing and she was fluttering with that, she wouldn't fly. She would just go round and round. You know, and sometimes we see birds that have injured a wing and she's trying to fly and all they're doing is going round and round on the ground. So love and knowledge are the two wings of a bird. And when the both the wings are equally strong, then the bird flows, you know, soars high into the sky. So they say, yes, you must have knowledge. Knowledge without love is barren, and love without knowledge becomes fanaticism. See, there are fanatics who say, my path alone is right, my God alone is superior. And that is, they love God, but they don't have knowledge of who this God is, and they become fanatics. While those who have too much knowledge and have no love, no surrender, do not give up the ego, then they develop arrogance. So together, the two of them are required for the person to soar high in the sky of spirituality. I'd like to end with a very, very beautiful story I had heard from Swami Chinmayananda, the master. It's one of the most beautiful stories, talks about importance of love. And it is said that there were two ants, and one lived in a salt hill. You know, she had somehow found salt. You know, there was a salt factory. So there was a salt hill and she lived there, and there was this other ant who lived in a sweets factory, like where there was sugar, a sugar factory. So she was in a sugar hill and other one was in a salt hill, and they were not too far, just next to each other. There was a wall, and one side was a salt hill and one side was a sugar hill. And so one day the ant who lived in the sugar hill said, let me see what's on the other side. So she crawled under the wall and went to the other side, and she saw this ant who lived in the salt hill. And the ant was so emaciated, so weak, you know, because eating salt, how can you grow? And this sugar ant was plump and, you know, very happy, looked, you know, very, you know, good shape. And she said, what's wrong with you? She said, well, this is all I get to eat is salt. She says, no, come with me. I'll take you to this sugar hill, and there you can enjoy all the sugar, and then you'll become nice like me. So the ant says, good. And then she says, okay, I'll come in with you for a couple of days. I'm not going to, you know, stay forever. I want to come back here. She says, okay, come for a couple of days. So she had to pack for a couple of days, right, to go. So she packed and took some stuff with her, what she will need for the couple of days. And so she goes with the ant. They go to the sugar hill, and the ant starts enjoying the sugar. And this ant, the one from the salt, you know, salt hill, she starts eating the sugar too. And after a day, she said, sugar doesn't taste anything special. So, what do you mean? You don't taste anything different? No, it tastes the same. I don't taste anything good. What are you praising this so much? Can't be. You know, I have been enjoying the sugar, and I know that salt that you have is nothing like that. She says, open your mouth. So she opens her mouth, and she had brought a couple of grains of salt with her, that I'm going on the trip, and how about if I don't have any food, I should take some salt with me. You know, like when we go on a trip, we take some food. So she had packed some salt that I might need it in case I get hungry. So even though she was tasting the sugar, it was contaminated with the salt. So she didn't enjoy the taste. So she says, spit out that salt. And then when she spits that salt out, then she enjoys the sweet. Oh, she said, oh, now I know what you were raving about. So similarly, when we approach the Lord, who is the epitome of sweetness, of the epitome of love, is the fulfillment of love. He's so sweet. We take the salt of our ego with us, our little ego that I am somebody special. And that salt of the ego contaminates our relationship, because we can never enjoy the sweetness of the oneness with the Lord and the sweet love that we experience, that all these great saints experience. Why? Because we have this little ego with us, we take the world with us. You know, we take this world, that like she took her salt. So we take this world with us, and we still want to keep our money and our this and our power and our, I still want to have all those attachments. And at the same time, I also want to enjoy the sweetness of the Lord. They say, give up all that. That's not important. Yeah, you need some for maintaining your life, but that's not the main purpose. You're here to enjoy the sweetness of the love of God. So that is what this book will tell us about how to develop that sweetness. There are some questions which you can just read, and we'll address them next week. That what are the questions that are going to be answered in this beautiful text? We'll cover it over a few months, maybe do one or two verses each week. But what is the nature of devotion? What is the altar of devotion? What are expressions of devotion? How to cultivate devotion? What are the obstacles in the path? And what is the nature of a devotee? So we'll address these questions next week in a brief, and then go on to the actual text. I'm really looking forward, because I myself feel that I have some knowledge, limited knowledge, because I have been listening to these Mahatmas, but I felt the lack in my life of surrender and love and devotion, and hopefully with this text we will all be able to develop that. And so I'm very blessed that I'm able to address the subject with all of you. Any comments, any questions? Rajasic, and we'll be talking that more on Sunday. The Sattvic, Rajasic and Tamasic, those are the three gunas, or the three qualities of an individual. An individual has these three different qualities. Sattva is the pure, the knowledge. Rajas is action and passion. And then tamas is ignorance or sleep. So we'll be talking in more detail on Sunday, actually. So in fact, the whole chapter, 14th chapter, that we'll do over the next year, we'll talk about these three qualities of an individual: Sattvic, Rajasic and Tamasic. So Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. But that will go into a lot more detail on Sunday. So please come. I know you're always there. So we will cover that in more detail. Right, there are actually four: Arti, Artharthi, Jignyasu and Gyani. That's also covered in the Gita. Arti is one who goes to God because he's suffering. So, oh, I'm suffering, God, I have this illness, or my mother has this illness, or my child is sick, so please heal them. So he goes to the temple or church and prays, God, please heal, please heal. So he's suffering, or it could be any other suffering. So that is the one. Then second is Artharthi, where he approaches the God because he wants something. You know, I'm poor, I want money, I want a job. My child, you know, is taking the exam, let him graduate, you know, let him get a good A plus or whatever, so he can get into a good college. So the second class of devotee is the one who worships God because he wants something from God. So that is the second one. And the third one is Jignyasu, who goes for knowledge. He says, let us see what is written in the Upanishads. You know, what does the Bhagavad Gita say? Or what, this old Bible, what does it really mean? So he studies the ancient languages, and he reads the Bible or he reads the Gita, and he becomes a scholar. Then he gets a PhD. He becomes a professor in some university, gives beautiful discourses, knows all the ancient languages, and people appreciate him. So he has approached God for knowledge, not because he wants God for what he is. All three of them go to God for something, either for relief from suffering or for getting something or for knowledge. But the fourth one is the one who is Gyani, who says, I want you and you alone. Nothing else is important. I do not come to you for relief of suffering. I do not come to you to get anything. I'm not even interested in knowledge. I just want you, you and you, you and you. So he says they all three are good. Krishna says it's at least they have come to me. At least they have come to God for relief of suffering, for knowledge or for getting something. It's good. But the one who is dear to me, God says, is the one who wants me. And it's the same thing in any other, like in a love. You know, if you love a girl, you say, I love you. You know why? Because her father has, you know, is a millionaire, and then, you know, he's in his will, he has said at the time of marriage, you know, she's going to get you know, this much money and also, yeah, so buy that by getting, and or he has a big business and he'll get me a job and I can become an executive as a son-in-law. So there you love her not because of her, but because of what she can bring you. Or same, it could be a person, girl loving a man also, not because she loves him, but what he can give me in exchange for that love. But one who says, oh, darling, I love you regardless, whether you have money or not, whether you have, it doesn't matter, but I love you for your sake. And so that is true love, where love is not with any precondition, not with any expectation, but total, unconditional, unselfish love. So that love is the highest. You know, others, okay, I love her, but in return, what am I getting? Then it becomes more like a business. So those are the four qualities or four kinds of devotee. I don't know if that's the one you are thinking of. Yes. Yeah. No, but you can love him as a friend. You know, like you love your friend, right? So make God your friend and love him as a, like you, suppose there is a very close friend whom you grew up with from childhood and you tell him all your secrets and he's your best friend and has stood with you through thick and thin, through all kinds of, you know, problems. So don't you love your friend? So you can love him as a friend or you can love him as a father or as, you know, so yeah, you can love God in many ways. That's why we've given all these other options. You don't only have to love him as in the man and woman way. You could love him in any other way, or you know, pick a mother goddess, but or love her as a mother. You know, you can love God as a mother. You can. I think it's good if you can to develop some form of God, even though we say God is formless, all-pervading. And when you get focused on a form, you can become very fanatical. You know, they say Jesus alone is the way, or Buddha alone, or Muhammad alone, and Allah, everybody else should be slaughtered. But at the same time, if you can develop love for a particular form, but then see the form in the whole universe, that all paths are that, and the form and the formless are one, that the formless God has taken this form of Jesus on the cross, or like we have Krishna or Ganpati or Mother Goddess, or so that formless entity has taken a form to bless the world. So then you can develop a relationship of love with that particular form, but without becoming fanatical and accepting all other forms as also his forms. There is one entity who has numerous forms and gets called by different names, and Allah and Father in Heaven and Buddha and Krishna and Shiva and all that. Or even a teacher, you know, that he's the teacher and I am the student. Like, you know, we were talking about, develop that kind of a relationship. But some kind of relationship of love. It doesn't only have to be that sensual kind of love, but anything that will bring you close. And the, and then also have a mantra, you know, if you can, with that form, of, if you can. Or even just Om, if you're chanting, but visualize that form in your mind. If you can do that, I think it will melt your heart. And then also listen to songs, love songs, and then superimpose God there. You know, of course, there are many beautiful hymns that are composed, but even a film song or a song sung by any of these, you know, Madonna or Michael Jackson or doesn't matter, whoever. But if it's a love song for a beloved, instead of the beloved, you can put God in there and then develop the same kind of relationship with God. So slowly as you have to develop the heart, because you can see we are not only the intellect, we are also the mind and the body. Sherry always tells, you have to carry all three with you. She has told me that many times. You cannot only take your intellect to God. You have to carry your mind, your emotions, even your body. You have to consider it as a temple of God. Does not mean that you spend hours, you know, beautifying it and doing makeup and all that, or buying expensive jewelry. But take care of the body as a temple of God, because God resides in this body. So take the body with you. Take the mind with you. Take the intellect. So all three, none of them can be left behind. Your whole being has to evolve spiritually. So develop that that feeling of love and develop that feeling of helplessness. You know, that I, as an individual, Tony, as an individual, what am I capable of doing? Whatever I have done is because of your grace, whatever abilities I, even the fact that I was brought into this mission, there is a divine grace. Even the, like when I'm speaking all these beautiful words, it is because of the Guru's grace and God's grace that I was given this opportunity to talk to all of you and given this book and this knowledge from all these great teachers. So develop that humility and that surrender. And not that I have reached or achieved it, but I am trying to develop that and reduce my ego, because ego is a very dangerous thing. And we have this protective, you know, that I have to make sure I don't get hurt. And a lot of times we have been hurt in the world, and the world has been rough with us. And so we feel that I have to be strong. One has to be strong, but at the same time be very flexible. You know, it's like the example they give is like a tree. There is a strong, tall tree. And then there is a reed that bends. And suppose a big storm comes, huge storm, hurricane comes. What's going to happen? The tree, which is strong, is going to fall down. But that reed just bends and allows the hurricane to go by. And she gets back again and she's fine. So develop some flexibility in your life and some surrender and some, I don't know if I'm making it clear. I myself am trying to bring that and think about it. And I think women have that easier. Women develop that, the surrender and the giving and the unselfishness and the sacrifice. It comes more natural to them. For us men, it is lot more difficult, I think. I think because we are from childhood taught, you have to be strong, you have to be tough, you know, you have to go out and fight, and we teach our kids boxing or to play football and go beat the other guy, and you should not cry, you should not show tears. So from, and then you are the breadwinner, you know, you go out and earn and you compete in the world and you fight. So we cultivate those qualities, and that strengthens and fattens the ego, unfortunately. I mean, it's good to succeed in the world, but then after a while can become an obstacle in your spiritual journey, because the ego is the main obstacle in our spiritual journey. For me personally, I think that has been the biggest hurdle that I need to overcome.
Yes. So God created everything beautiful and everything good, and our reaction to those things fill us with joy. It's easy for me to think of God as the root of these things, the creator of everything. Mm-hmm. So not only do I love God because I see something beautiful and it makes me feel good inside, but I realize that there are an infinite number of things that are attached to that, and it's easy to love somebody who for mm-hmm. something. That's the creator of everything that's good, not just one particular context.
Yes, no, that's good. That's a very good way of loving God as the creator of this beautiful universe. Yeah.
The beginning of love, the beginning of beauty.
Right.
The essence of it.
Right.
It's so great and so big, it's impossible, I feel, for a human to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, that's
true. You get a preview or a kind of a glimpse by looking at what you can feel in our world.
Right. True.